to the New World next week. I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And I'm James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. James, after 4 weeks off, a little bit of a summer break, my kind of Media Monarchy tendency would be to load up this returning episode with all the headlines and updates, but it's impossible to cover it all. And all I'll say is, in our absence, thanks to all the people for keeping the New World Next Week hashtag alive. And those updates would pretty much keep you more up to date than we can even give you right here. So as the summer rages on, it's currently 102 degrees here. That's 39 for everyone not in America. And there's a lot of hot divide and conquer nonsense going on thanks to the internet outrage machine. But all the while, there are really important moves being made on the grand chessboard. And what we try and do here on these episodes is give you a good glimpse of what's going on and give you the links and the sources to continue the research. Our first story this week, arrests in Florida and Israel tied to the J.P. Morgan hack. This coming from the USA Today. U.S. authorities arrested four people in Israel and Florida on July 21st, some of whom are believed to be tied to computer hacks of J.P. Morgan Chase and other financial institutions. This spate of seemingly unrelated arrests weren't publicly tied to the 2014 J.P. Morgan computer breach, which comprised tens of millions of accounts, or compromised, rather. But a federal law enforcement official told USA Today that some of the suspects in the schemes outlined in the court papers are also suspects in this hack. So, of course, the official was not authorized to speak publicly, but he said the suspects rounded up over an alleged pump-and-dump scheme and an allegedly illegal Bitcoin operation initially surfaced in the government's investigation of last year's bank breach. Now, James, as we noted, this story happened just a couple of weeks ago on July 21st, and we do have some updates on this story.
Yes, we do. Sorry, I didn't realize that was... yes, we do. Well, I have a bold prediction about this story, not just an update. I want to say that now that this has been tied back to some Israelis, it is extremely likely that this is not going to be swept under the rug, unless they can tie it back to the boogeyman of the week. And that's exactly what seems to be happening, or at least is one of the possible outs for this story. I'm looking at the Bloomberg coverage of this story, and they go on to note that U.S. officials believe the cyber attacks were done with the help of expert hackers in... Any guesses?
Ukraine?
Russia. According to a second person familiar with the case. And then it goes on to talk about a very interesting aspect of this. In June, J.P. Morgan reassigned Chief Information Security Officer Greg Rattray amid staff discord over his handling of the breach. Rattray and his boss, Jim Cummings, a former head of the U.S. Air Force's cyber combat unit, were the chief advocates of the theory that the Russian government was involved in the breach. Very interesting. So you have U.S. Air Force cybercom, ex-cybercom unit worker in the J.P. Morgan Information Security Office, working on who did the breach, coming up with this theory it was the Russian government, and causing discord among the staff. Obviously, people are unhappy with this because it's a load of BS. But again, this is there's so many different aspects to this, but they all converge on the thing that we've been talking about for literally for years now. Virtual false flag. It, you know, who knows where it came from? Oh, it must have come from our enemy. Who's the enemy of the week? Russia. Okay, it came from Russia. And that seems to be what they, at least one vector that they're trying to insert in here. But if they're not successful in blaming it on the Russian government, as I say, I'm sure it will be swept under the rug like all of the other cases of Israeli spying that we've seen over the years.
This is a really interesting story, and I had actually missed it. So again, I think that's what's great if we can kind of pick up the pieces and look at these stories. And again, give all the information, everything we say and cite is included in the show notes, and you can continue the investigation. So, James, our second story this week is one that really fascinates me, and it's that little bit of, to use a German word, Schadenfreude, that shameful joy. Her very lowness shown giving Nazi salute in leaked 1933 home movie. Buckingham Palace has defended footage from 1933 that shows a young Queen Elizabeth performing a Nazi salute with her family in Balmoral. The video, which was obtained by The Sun, I think this is the Sun newspaper is the one who originally published this, shows the Queen, then either 6 or 7 years old, join the Queen Mother and her uncle Prince Edward, the Prince of Wales, in raising an arm in salute. She made the salute as she played alongside her younger sister, Princess Margaret, And so this whole movie, which you can actually watch the whole thing, it's about 17 seconds long. It's obviously silent home footage. Shows the queen playing with a dog in the lawn and the gardens before she does the Nazi salute. She's just doing what her mom does. So even though the sort of, well, they were young and, you know, lots of people supported the Nazis because you kind of had to, she's learning it from her parents. And who are her parents? The people that run the kingdom. I think this is one of those great stories that shows, yes, they are Nazis. They have always been Nazis, and they have always been connected to Nazis, and they will lie about it at every step of the way. They're obviously pretty pissed about this, and I've seen a little bit of coverage that almost seems to suggest there's somewhat a battle within the UK, and maybe there are tabloids and newspapers that aren't quite connected to the crown that are maybe kind of gleefully going and exposing this more and more. So the British Film Institute is actually working with Buckingham Palace to find the source of this leak. And I don't know exactly what they'll do or if they'll even find anyone connected to this leak. Interestingly enough, James, last week I saw Morrissey, who I'm a big fan of, lead singer of the Smiths, been a solo artist ever since then, always politically outspoken. Just as this story was kind of breaking a week or so ago, he had a date here in Portland, and they came out on stage for their encore after an hour and a half show and came out and played the Smiths song, The Queen is Dead, and he made a quick comment at the beginning. He made this comment that said, you know, here in America, you might not think it, but you're actually kind of lucky. You're not run by a royal family, whereas we are literally ruled by Nazis. And they bust into the song. And I think a lot of people are sort of going, oh, I don't know what he's talking about. But hopefully later, it all kind of made sense as people saw these stories and saw Queen Elizabeth giving the Nazi salute. So, James, not very surprising, is it?
Oh, not in the least. No, the only thing that's surprising to me is that anyone at all would be surprised by this. And I think I'll go along with that narrative. Yeah, it's a 7-year-old girl. I don't think you can really blame her for that action, but it's clearly, it's what the family is doing. It's what her mother is doing. It's what Uncle Edward is doing. It's clearly part of the family. And the fact that these bloodthirsty, eugenics-obsessed tyrants would have been Nazi supporters, yes, we already knew that. And we've known it for generations at this point, and it's well documented. So the fact that they are supporters of fascist, national socialist, collectivist, corporatist fiends should be no surprise to anyone, and certainly no surprise to me. And to I've documented the various ways that the American financial elite were absolutely supporters of the Nazis, as well, of course, as the royal family, because tyrants love collectivists, fascists, and national socialists, and they always will, and they always have, and I'm sure they'll try to fund something like that again in the future. So no surprise whatsoever.
So, James, it's a little bit of a double shot of Brits behaving badly, as UK Lord John Sewell also caught up in a cocaine party with prostitutes. And once you see the pictures, you can't really unsee them, but he's basically hanging out with doing hookers and blow, which is all well and good if you want to wear women's underwear and do all that stuff. But you just can't turn around and then try and legislate and punish other people for doing the same thing. So, James, a little, again, it's maybe a double shot of shameful joy over hypocrite tyrants being exposed for the bastards that they are. Pardon me. Let's move to our third and final story this week. James, we're trying to keep a breezy return here after our New World Next Week hiatus and do a little bit of good news next week. You can also follow and submit stories using hashtag good news next week, as we have all through 2015 included some type of good news, because there has to be positive news. It can't be all bad. We have to try and raise ships, and that's what we're going to continue to do. This is one of those that's maybe what we call a not unmitigated good news next week kind of story. Hey, for cheese, barter booms in cash-squeezed rural Greece. This coming from Reuters. Wild boar and power cuts were Greek cotton farmer Mimis Sakonikas' biggest worries until a bank shutdown last month left him stranded without cash, to pay suppliers, and his customers without money to pay him. Squeezed on all sides, the 41-year-old farmer began informal bartering to get around the cash crunch. He now pays some of his workers in kind with his clover crop and exchanges equipment with other farmers instead of buying or renting machinery. He's part of a growing barter economy that some Greeks deplore as a step backwards from modernity, but others embrace as a practical means of short-term economic survival. When he rented a field this month, he agreed to pay with part of his clover production. He said, quote, "It's a nightmare. I owe many people money now, gas stations and firms that service machinery. I have to go to the bank every single day, and the money I can take out is not enough." He also grows vegetables and corn on 148 acres of farmland. He said he's begun bartering in some forms. It existed in the past, but now it's growing. Times have become really tough, and friends and relatives help each other out. Imagine that. A rising number of Greeks in rural areas are swapping goods and services in cashless transactions since the government shut down banks on June 28th for 3 weeks, restricted cash withdrawals, and banned transfers abroad to halt a run on deposits and prevent a collapse of the precious banks. That was days before Athens then became the first advanced economy to default on an IMF loan, forcing it to request humiliating third financial bailout. James, we've been following the situation in Greece essentially all this year, and I think one of our first New World Next Week episodes of 2015 sort of hailed Cyprus as they were coming in, and you and I kind of looked askance and going, they're selling a bunch of hoity-toity high ideals, but they are massively selling people out. No one should be surprised by the Cyprus sellout, James.
I think not. Again, the solution is not going to be political, which is why I would put this story in the good news category, even though obviously we're not making light of the economic hardship that the Greek people are going through. That is not good news, and the situation that the country has been placed in by their leaders over the years, sold out by their so-called leaders over the years, is not good news. But the idea of, if not barter or community exchange, alternative currencies generally are, I think, the way forward, or at least something that we need to be thinking about in our more comfortable economic positions, because it is only because there has been and does exist that sort of barter network and those ideas in Greece that they're able to switch with such ease. I mean, it's not easy, but they are doing it right now because that culture has already existed in Greece and has for a very long time. And that culture doesn't exist in Japan. It doesn't exist in Canada. I'm sure it doesn't exist in the United States to anything like the same extent, which is why we need to build up the alternatives now before the great big collapse comes. Because when the dollar is worth toilet paper and they go on the bank holiday and you can't get anything out of the ATM, the question is, what are you going to do? And if you have to wait for the banksters to come up with some manna from heaven for you, then you're going to be at their beck and call and at their mercy. But if you have an alternative in place, an alternative community exchange that doesn't rely on that system, then you are already ahead of the game. That's why I think this is good news in the sense that it's something that we should be thinking about and we should be trying to implement now. I've said this for time and time and time again over the years, and it's only coming into sharper focus the more we see the Greek collapse unfolding.
James, there's a frightening just update and related to this story. Migrant crisis meets the Greek crisis as all kinds of refugee camps are essentially being set up in Athens. And again, it's thanks to the audience of this show. I don't even want to call them the audience. That makes it sound like it's some passive thing and they sit there and go, oh yeah, James, you're right. We share all this information. This is how this is all really works. So thanks to all the people who have kept us updated with these kind of stories. And I think just in closing, James, some of the few other New World Next Week updates on stories that we have been following time and time again on these episodes. And again, they come from our fantastic supporters like G.J. Salisbury, Dazzalt Theory, Leprechaun 1984, David Ewart 4, and lots of other unwieldy Twitter names, but they are all in the show notes, and a huge thanks to all of them for keeping us up to date. So your New World Next Week updates are: hospitals are now the number 3 killer in the United States, the Satanic Temple unveils a Baphomet statue in Detroit, Australia drops a pretty impressive Westminster Pedophile Network documentary that once aired cannot be unaired, and General Wesley Clark, the mad bomber of Belgrade, wants to intern disloyal Westerners, giving an interview saying, oh, well, maybe people should be put in camps. There's some speculation. Is this connected to some kind of Jade Helm psyop? And I can't say that it is, but it's interesting to kind of add to the Jade Helm situation playing out here in the States. And finally, abroad, the Iran deal will be competing in Europe head-on with Russia, who, by the way, just vetoed the MH17 tribunal draft at the UN Security Council. James, do you have any words about pretty much the latest on Russia? Because as we see, that's what all these proxy moves are about.
Yes, just more the cookie crumbs leading in that direction. And I think that MH17 veto was interesting because, as Russia noted with the veto, they brought this to the Security Council knowing Russia would veto it. It is a political grandstanding kind of move to bring that to the Security Council. So again, it's just more part of the demonization so that you can point and look and say, look at those damn Russians. They're the evil in the world right now.
So James, just in closing, all I want to say is I've actually got kind of a big announcement coming up concerning the future of Media Monarchy. But in the meantime, I would just ask everyone out there, if you enjoy this work, please consider signing up for a recurring donation or even making one-time donations to support independent, non-commercial, open-source news and information. Our donation buttons are at the top right of our respective websites, CorbettReport.com and MediaMonarchy.com.
All right. On that note, we're going to be back next week and every week thereafter. James, it's good to be back with you and good to be back with the audience. Thank you again for your time.
Yeah. Thanks so much, man. Take care.